Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It is the Robert Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio, coming to you live from the Quicken Loans Studios, National Mortgage Lender. Quicken Loans, apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. All right, we're going to sift through the rest of these calls on the shift really quickly because I still have to make my NFL picks. That all rhymed, in case you were looking for some kicks. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. Hey, everyone, here's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Do you need homeowners, renters, or motorcycle insurance, too? Get it all at geico.com. All right, so in honor of baseball trying to pick up the pace of the play, we're going to do these calls quickly, so get your pace ready. Larry in South Bend, you're up first here on CBS Sports Radio. Go ahead.
Oh, thanks, Robin. Just a couple of quick things, and I'll move it quick here. The shift, let's compromise. Outfielders, you can shift. Infielders, you cannot shift anymore. The pace of the game, nobody gives credit to these hitters. 96, 97, 98 miles an hour coming at them, and they'd work on hitting 12 months a year, and they're fouling off 10 and 12 pitches at a time. Nothing you can do about that. They just take forever in the box. Your idea of a clock, that's a non-starter. The throw is over. You want to limit those to three. Big advantage to the base runner. Again, a non-starter. Quick history lesson. The shift is not relatively new. Lou Boudreau was using that against Ted Williams in the 1930s. Happy Festivus to everybody, and you can rack me.
All right, appreciate it. But what I was saying before about like throwing over to first base and you saying it being a non-starter, like I'm for incentivizing more base stealing and running. You have to understand, like, what I would be doing if I'm creating more of that, good. Kip in Dallas. Kip, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, man. I'll make this quick.
Sure.
What's the whole point in the shift?
To get an out.
Okay. So if we're going to eliminate the shift, in football, do we need to eliminate stacking the box?
But in football, they've already eliminated plenty. If that's the point you're trying to make, in basketball, they eliminated certain defensive, you know, they changed the way you can align yourself defensively. In football, they have eliminated. Now, in football, it's been more of a player safety issue, but they certainly have changed the way that they play defense, and it has opened up the game for more offense. So, like, there's really no leg to stand on in saying, there's also arguments in basketball to eliminate hack or whomever, right? Because it screws up the game. So, I mean,
I live in Dallas. You know, I do not like the Cowboys. I'll make that clear. But I see the defense stack the box against Dallas all the time. You know, and also, do we need to eliminate the curveball and just throw them fastballs?
But that's not the same thing. I mean, like, I get what you're trying to say. It's not the same thing. You know, like, it's not as simple as everybody makes it out to be like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to knock it the other way. This ain't your slow pitch softball league out in the park, bro. Like, it's not what it is. It ain't that easy. Greg in Texas. Greg, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
I think the previous caller might have answered mine. My comparison was, if the NBA can establish a no zone rule, why can't MLB establish a no shift?
Yeah, actually, basketball changed the rules that have sort of allowed more of a zone defense, but your point stands anyway. They did change the way you play defense, and part of the changes they made to open up the lane were because they were getting a lot of these 90-185 games, or even worse. They were getting, you know, the Detroit Pistons were playing the San Antonio Spurs, and it was 83-79. And it was just ugly, and the NBA wanted more up and down action, so they made rule changes to get that. And look, they got it. Steve in Milwaukee. Steve, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, love the topic actually on baseball. This is probably the next best thing next to the DH conversation. But on the, I'm either for or against the shift. But if analytics show that the shift has the thumpers swinging away, would that take away more home runs and just to get 500 more hits?
I don't think the shift is the only change that they need to make. I've made, you know, very clear what I think about a pitch clock. But I would say baseball could stand to lose some home runs for more balls in play. There are plenty of home runs. Like, the number of home runs hit in baseball is not a problem. Like, there are plenty of home runs hit. The problem is it feels like it's a home run or a strikeout, and there's no in-between. They need a little bit more in-between, and that would help them out a lot. All right, time to get to my NFL picks for them. All right, Anthony, where am I at? How did I do last week?
So you picked 8 games last week, a lot. You went 4-4. So you're 32-27-1.
All right, that's good. You would say that's good, right?
You're over 500. You're making people money overall for the year.
All right, should I pick extra games again this week? Since we're running out of weeks, right? I mean, how many more weeks are there for me to do this?
We're on week number 14 now.
Now, by picking more games, does that put me at greater risk? I guess it does, technically, right? Because there are more I could possibly get wrong. Because, like, even if I had a bad week and I only picked 5 games, the worst possible week, I'd be 500. But if I pick 8 and I get 6 wrong, I'm under 500. So should I be risky and pick more than 5? Or should I play it conservatively? You know what? I tell guys to go for it on fourth down. So I saw a bunch of games I feel okay about. Let's start with New Orleans -8 over Tampa. Saints coming off a loss to Dallas. They're a better team than Tampa. It's really as simple as that. That's my pick. That's my analysis of that game. The Saints lost. The Saints are really good. Tampa's not so good. Saints are going to beat them by more than a touchdown. Carolina over Cleveland. I brought this up a little earlier in the show. Now, there is the chance that the wheels have just come off the Panthers and they're bad now. However, the Panthers looked pretty good for most of the season. And the Browns, after the coaching change, they got a little bit of a boost. They played well for a while there. But ultimately, you know, they are what they are, and that's a mediocre at best team. I'm not saying they are as bad as they were under Hugh Jackson, but I don't think they're a playoff kind of team either. So with Carolina playing for their playoff lives, I would take them over the Browns in that game in a pick 'em. Houston, -4.5 over Indy. Really, the only reason to pick against Houston in this game would be to say, hey, they're due for a loss, having reeled off as many consecutive wins as they have, and it's a division game. But I'll ride the hot hand in this case, and I think Houston is legitimate. I know people point to their schedule not exactly being devastating, but all of a sudden that Dallas win looks a little bit better in the midst of it. That win at Denver looks a little bit better in the midst of it. Handling Tennessee, handling Cleveland look a little bit better. And I really think Houston's good. I mean, I think their defense is for real. They don't have to drop extra people into coverage. They don't have to put extra people on the line to get a rush. They can have extra people in coverage. So I like the defense there. I like the way Watson is playing. Give me the Texans. The Giants, +1.5 over Washington. The Giants are all of a sudden with that group of teams that's just mediocre. You know, at the beginning of the season, they were bad. And I started just picking against them every week. But they've turned a corner in the sense of they're no longer a bad team. They're like every other team. You know, they're this handful of teams that are really good and a handful of teams that are really bad, and the rest are about the same. The Giants are in that group now that's about the same. And Washington doesn't have a quarterback. So give me the team that's playing better in the Giants against the team that's playing Mark Sanchez. The Chiefs -9 over Baltimore. I like the way the Ravens are playing, but their defense is really going to have to do a lot of work if they're going to win this game. Then they've had a good defense this year, and I like what they've done, how they've used Lamar Jackson, but that formula, until he's ready to open it up more, and this is not saying anything negative about him, he's a rookie, and there's things he has to get better at. Until he's ready to open up more, I just don't see them scoring that many points. I don't see them able to win a shootout. So that puts a ton of pressure on that defense to really hold the Chiefs down, which we haven't seen anybody do this year, right? What are the Chiefs have 2 losses, barely in Foxborough and barely against the Rams. And in both of those games, they scored plenty of points. So I like the Chiefs -9 over the Ravens. I just don't think the Ravens can keep up on the scoreboard. Give me the Eagles +4 over Dallas. This is an interesting game because both teams are sort of trending upwards. I think Dallas, obviously after that win against New Orleans, hit their peak for the amount of positive attention they're going to receive. They've won 4 games in a row. And I think Dallas needs to be taken moderately seriously at this point, considering their defense, considering what Amari Cooper's done to open up their offense, what it's done to open up for Ezekiel Elliott, how much better Dak Prescott is playing. But the Eagles were looking flat for a minute there, and I think they've now turned their corner a bit. So in that division game, with the division still to be decided, just something tells me that the Eagles are going to put it together in this one and upset the Cowboys, or at least lose by like a field goal in Dallas in that one. And finally, I'll take the Seahawks -3.5 over Minnesota. I was big on Minnesota when the season started. I'm really just not so big on Minnesota at this point. I think they've revealed themselves to be mediocre, and I think people slept on the Seahawks. That's just a tough away game playing with that Seattle home crowd. So give me the Seahawks in that one over the Vikings. And those are my NFL picks for this coming week.
You're listening to The Robin Lundberg Show.
It is The Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio. I'd give you some random pop culture tidbit, but I have a guest waiting on the line. I usually do after that, you know, intro. Jeff Diamond, former NFL Executive of the Year, current consultant in the media, including for the Sporting News. And Jeff, I want to ask you, since you were former Titans president, former Vikings GM, a question I put out to the callers earlier in the show. If you were a head coach, would you rather coach Baker Mayfield or Aaron Rodgers, essentially the Browns or the Packers, as your next job?
Well, good morning, Robin. And, yeah, good question. I think I would take Aaron Rodgers as the proven commodity right now, even though Baker Mayfield looks like he's got a great future. And I think Mike McCarthy may be able to answer that very well. He may be the one that's going to end up coaching the Bulls.
That's funny. I mean, McCarthy, in a sense, do you feel like he got scapegoated a little bit? Maybe it was just time for a change there. That happens. But it does feel like, you know, the finger of blame was pointed squarely in his direction.
Yeah, I wrote about that in my sportingnews.com column this week. And I really felt that it was disrespectful to him to release him with 4 weeks to go. Obviously, he was going to be let go. We know that. But I just think it's a different situation for a head coach to be let go in the middle, not this isn't the middle of the season, but when the season's still going on, as opposed to being let go on Black Monday, the day after the regular season, when there's probably six coaches let go and all the attention isn't on him. And I think the other thing that I kind of took the Packers to task for, and Mark Murphy, their president, is just his explanation that, oh, it gives us a head start on the coaching search. Well, that's a bunch of hogwash, because all the top candidates that they're going to want to interview are not going to be available until January anyway. Maybe there's a couple college coaches they could talk to, but those guys will be accessible in January also. And then to say, well, it gives Mike a head start on the market. And I think if you asked Mike McCarthy, he would have said, no, I'd rather have a chance to finish out the season and maybe get a few wins because we have a soft schedule. And not necessarily that he thought they'd get to the playoffs, but stranger things have happened if they did run the table. But certainly that Arizona loss was extremely damaging, and as were the Seattle and Minnesota losses before that to their playoff hosts. But the Arizona loss at home, I think, was the thing that really made it very difficult. But I don't like when a president CEO starts saying, well, it gives us a head start in the coaching search. It gives him a head start on the market. And that's just a bunch of bull.
Yeah, there was really no difference whether they fired him now or at the end of the season. So why not wait until the end of the season, basically, I think is what you're saying. Let's go through some of these other storylines. While we were talking about the Browns, I want to touch on that game quickly because the Panthers are there. And the Panthers, really, their season on the line. It looks like Cam Newton's dealing with a bit of a shoulder problem right now. And I'm wondering if the wheels have totally fallen off Carolina, or they're going to get that back on track and be back in that wild card mix.
Yeah, I think they're in trouble. And I think that I kind of like Cleveland to win that game at home against Carolina. And I think that the Panthers are in a kind of a free fall right now, which is not what you want to be come week 13 of the season, and or week 14, actually, when you factor in the buys. And so it's just, I think that the NFC in the wild card picture right now, it's really, I think, Seattle and Minnesota to lose, and obviously a huge game on Monday night between those two teams, and the Vikings needing a win, especially with the Bears facing the Rams. And if the Bears lose to the Rams and the Vikings beat Seattle on Monday night, they're back to a half game out, and with Miami and Detroit ahead before they play Chicago in the season finale. So that keeps the Vikings in the NFC North race if they can get that win on Monday night. But obviously Seattle is playing well. It's a tough place to play. And the Vikings offense was a little jittery against New England. So I think that's going to be an interesting game to watch too come Monday night. But I do think Carolina's in trouble. I think the Redskins are obviously in trouble with their quarterback situation. And Philadelphia and Dallas, another very big game in the wild card race and in the NFC East race too. And so it's going to be an interesting weekend coming up.
Robin Lundberg talking to Jeff Diamond, former NFL executive, current contributor to the Sporting News here on CBS Sports Radio. Since you mentioned it, the Eagles and the Cowboys, maybe the most important game of the week, considering where they're at in the division. And it feels like both of these teams are sort of getting it together at the same time. Who do you like in that one?
I do like Dallas at home in that game. I think the Cowboys are playing a little better than the Eagles right now. The Eagles just doesn't quite seem all right there. And just been a little bit of a struggle for them this year, obviously. And I think that Dallas has got the running game going. I think Dak Prescott has stepped up his game. And I think it's really an interesting period in his career, too, because he potentially can be extended next year. Jerry Jones has said he will be extended next year. But how great a contract he gets, if he gets into that $25 million a year range, I think is very dependent on how the Cowboys finish, if he gets them to the playoffs, and how he performs. And the last few weeks have been very good as they've been on this winning streak. So I think that, yeah, it's really an interesting game. It could go either way, but I would favor Dallas slightly in this game.
Another one that stands out on the schedule to me is the game between the Ravens and the Chiefs. And I want your perspective on two things here. One, how seriously we should be taking the Ravens. Obviously, they have, you know, what looks like a quarterback shift that they're handling at the moment. But their defense has been very good this year, and they're playing well right now. And then on the Chiefs side, how much, you know, we should expect their offense to take any step back from just the football perspective of not having Kareem Hunt.
Yeah, I think that's a huge loss for them. And obviously, I think Clark Hunt did the right thing after he lied to them and after a disgraceful domestic violence act that happened. And I think that was definitely the right move for the organization. But there is going to be a pain involved for the team in terms of their potential in the playoffs. I think that they still get the win. This is in Kansas City, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, I think at home they get the win. Kansas City, a tough place to play, and I think that they'll find a way to get this done with their other offensive weapons. But I think down the road in the playoffs is where it's going to hurt, and the weather gets a little colder, and potentially if they have to go to New England, I think that's going to be tough for them without that lead running back that they have. And so I think this has kind of turned the tide a little bit in the AFC back in the Patriots' favor. And I think we saw a Patriots team that beat the Vikings last week that looks like it's rounding into form to a certain extent. And so to me, I think I see New England for the fourth time in 5 years in the Super Bowl again. And obviously Kansas City can threaten them. The Chargers are a wild card in the whole thing. And so is potentially Pittsburgh if they get their act together. So, and the Houston Texans, don't sleep on the Texans. They're having won 10 straight now, and wow, are they playing some terrific football? And so I think that the AFC is going to shape up to be a tough race. But to me, the Patriots are still going to be the team to beat.
But what about all this parody I always hear about in the NFL? The Patriots are there every year.
Yeah, 10th straight year winning the AFC East.
So, I think they should rename that division Patriots and Friends.
Yeah, exactly. Well, maybe that's more of an indictment of their cohorts in the division, too,
yeah.
As opposed to certainly the Patriots have been a fantastic organization and a great run, and the Belichick-Brady combination has gotten it done. But yeah, they haven't had a lot of challenges in recent years from the Jets, Miami, and Buffalo.
Jeff, I appreciate your time this morning. Thank you.
Thanks, Robin. Have a good weekend.
You're listening to The Robin Lundberg Show.
It's The Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio. And before I get to everything I have not as of yet, let's get to Corey in South Carolina. Corey, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio. Corey, you there,
Hello?
Man?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Hey, I'd like to talk about Deshaun Watson. What do you think about this 10-game win streak?
Well, I think, Corey, sort of what happened here is when you have an ACL injury like Watson did, not only do you take a while to get back and get on the field, but you also take a little bit to get your confidence back, right? Once you're out there,
right.
Especially when you're a guy like Watson who relies on his legs. So
yeah.
I think what you saw was the first couple games of the season, Watson may have been ready to play, but he wasn't ready yet, right? And
yes,
it's not a surprise to me that, you know, their winning streak is coinciding, obviously, with his playing better, which is a duh. But I think the Texans are for real because I think he has proven himself in big situations to be a guy who can go out and win a game. They have weapons, Hopkins, obviously. And defensively, I mentioned it before, they have a good defense where they're able to get pressure without sending extra guys. So I put the Texans right in the mix with any of those teams in the AFC at this point. Look, I mean, how many games do you have to win in a row before you're taken seriously?
Yes, sir. Now, if you had the key ingredient to that you would know that would take them to the Super Bowl, what would it be? Would it be an upgrade at on the offense or defense? I have a theory, but I'd like to know yours.
I think at this point, there's only so far you can get with defense today.
Right, yeah.
You know, like you need to be able to score with these teams because you can't, it's not fair to put it on the defenses of like the early 2000s Baltimore Ravens just don't exist anymore and probably never will again. I mean, that's why the Thomas acquisition helped. I think if they had somebody, you know, Lamar Miller's been solid for them, but if they had one of those playmaking backs out of the backfield who could catch it and take it to the house, I think that might be what opened it up for him.
Yeah, that'd be a nightmare, especially with Demaryius Thomas there now. But yeah, that would be. Thanks a lot for answering my call, and you have a great day, sir.
No doubt about it. You got it. All right, time to get to everything I have not as of yet in another one. All right, Anthony, what is up first?
All right, Robin, Heisman ceremony tonight in New York. You got Tua, you got Kyler, you got Haskins. Those are your Heisman Trophy finalists, so who is your choice to win the Heisman Trophy?
I think I stay with Tua. I'm not going to – if Tua was the runaway Heisman favorite up until, like, 2 weeks ago, honestly, what changed since then? He got hurt a little bit, and Alabama was in a tight game. I don't think I'd have a problem with any of those guys winning. I don't think it's a definitive difference. But I would say if Tua is the runaway favorite all year, I don't know if he's done enough to lose it in the last few weeks.
So Kyler Murray wants to play both MLB and the NFL. Should Kyler Murray play Major League Baseball? Should he stick with football? And which sport would you pick to play?
This is a really tough one. Like, in a vacuum, baseball, duh, right? You're not subjecting yourself to possible serious injury or brain trauma, right? I mean, we know what can happen to your brain playing football. And then look, even at the quarterback's position, we know what can happen to your body. Just like in the last 2 weeks, we've seen two devastating injuries a few weeks between the kid at UCF and Alex Smith, right? Like, those are really – like, and thoughts go out to both of those guys. I hope Kinsey and Alex Smith make full recoveries, and especially with the Alex Smith situation right now, it's obviously a very serious one. And what I'm saying by those being serious injuries, like, those are the kind of things don't go right, you can lose a limb, not to mention what can happen upstairs playing football. if he had that, I think, was he guaranteed like $4 million to play baseball? That seemed like a no-brainer in a sense. The only argument against it is this. If he winds up, if you're a middling baseball player, run-of-the-mill, you don't stand to make the kind of money that you do or get the kind of notoriety that you do playing quarterback in the NFL. You know, quarterbacks get paid $20 million a year, which is obviously a huge sum of money. So that's where the conversation comes into play. Exactly what that he can do on the baseball field. If he's good enough to be a real major league player, then I think it's probably smarter to play baseball. But if we already know he's good enough to play quarterback in the NFL, and that's different than playing any other position in that league. Ultimately, when it comes down to these things, though, he should do what he wants to do. That's the answer. Nobody should be telling him what he wants to do. It's like the, you know, Jalen Hurts and Kelly Bryant, right? Like you get these two different things, and everybody's like, oh, this proves why Jalen Hurts was right to stay at Alabama. No, it doesn't. Just be happy for Jalen Hurts. Like, be happy for him. It doesn't have to be about whether you transfer or not. Just like, you know, if Kelly Bryant thinks the best thing for him to do is transfer and go play, good for him. If Jalen Hurts thought that the best thing for him to do was stay at Alabama, good for him. Whatever Kyler Murray decides to do, it should be his decision. And I hope he does what he wants and doesn't listen to what other people have to say, because it's his life and we only get one of them.
Sticking with college football, Urban Meyer announced this week that he will retire as head coach of Ohio State after the Rose Bowl. Do you believe Meyer will ever coach again?
Yes. I already thought he was wishy-washy enough, and I know these guys. Like, I sat next to Rick Pitino, and he told me he's never going to coach again. And like 2 weeks later, he's saying he's going to coach again, right? And I could tell in the way he answered my question when I asked him that. He did one of those, you know, you never know with the opportunity, but as of right now, I'd never coach again. All right. I get what you're doing. Urban Meyer did the same thing, basically saying, as far as I'm thinking now, I'm retired. I don't think he left Ohio State totally on his own volition. I believe that was strongly pressured from behind the scenes because of what went on at Ohio State. I think his health probably played a factor, but I really think that the scandal at Ohio State definitely played a factor, and everybody came to this agreement. So that isn't, to me, the kind of circumstances that lead to an actual retirement versus a transition period. So I would expect to see Urban Meyer trying to coach somewhere again in the not-too-distant future.
Michigan's AD came out this week and said that there's no validity to the comments that Jim Harbaugh wants out of Michigan. Should Jim Harbaugh go back to the NFL?
I mean, are we so sure he would just have success if he did? I mean, what about, I don't even want to call what he's doing at Michigan failure. That's not fair. I mean, maybe he could beat Ohio State now with Ryan Day over there. But I just don't understand. If we are to say that he is not liking college or not having the same level of success there, what is to say that he's just going to go and have it at the NFL level again? Now, he did a good job at the NFL level. We saw what happened with that 49ers team, obviously famously with Colin Kaepernick at quarterback. So I don't doubt that he has the ability, but I don't think, you know, it's some sort of no-brainer that if it's not working out at college, it's going to work out again in the NFL. And then also, I wouldn't say it's not working out at Michigan right now. They still are 10-2 on the season, 8-1 in the conference. I wouldn't exactly call that a terrible year. So this is another case of maybe it's a personal preference standpoint where he prefers to coach pros because it's more about the schemes and what you're doing rather than, you know, the rah-rah stuff, or, you know, some guys like doing the rah-rah stuff. We know Urban Meyer was a rah-rah kind of guy and prefers college. I just not so sold on the idea of if things aren't going well at Michigan that some NFL team is ultimately saying, oh, please, please take our job, Harbaugh.
Thinking about Jim Harbaugh too now, Robin, is he could beat Ohio State the next 15 years. The fact that he never did it with Meyer there, that's always going to be a stain on him now, on his legacy, that he never beat Urban Meyer.
Even if he wins a national championship? I don't think people will care if he like if they win the national championship next year. I don't think people will care that he didn't beat Urban Meyer. I think you're right to a degree. If that, you know, if he is very good but never great, it's that one thing, that one of those things that people could point to. But I think if he gets over the hump, it'll be okay.
So the SEC commissioner came out and said that UCF should look inward to address the college football playoff issue. So is this all UCF's fault, Robin, that they didn't make the college football playoff?
No. I said this before, but what is incentivizing teams to schedule UCF? You know, these big conference schools have tough enough schedules as is. So when they're putting their schedule together, they're not exactly looking for tough games, that many tough games outside of them, which makes it a bit of a hindrance for UCF. If UCF, if it's just simply how they're scheduling that's holding them back, sure, fine. But I think it's somewhere in between here, and there's only so much they can do. And really, they've taken care of business. I laughed and joke. I make cracks about them, you know, updating their Wikipedia page with their latest accomplishment. But at some point, we got to take them seriously, right? At some point, you know, they're good, and we're getting there. If they beat, I mean, and here's the problem, because bowl games are ultimately meaningless, so you question the motivation a team has in a bowl game. But UCF, what did they do last year? Well, they went undefeated, right? 12-0 in the regular season. And then they beat Auburn, who was ranked number 7, I believe, at the time, in the Peach Bowl. So if they go undefeated again this season and beat LSU in their bowl game, don't they have a case? At that point, don't they have a case?
Kobe Bryant called out the bandwagon Warriors fans. Do you agree with Kobe's message and his trolling of the Warriors bandwagon fans?
No. I mean, I agreed with Kobe's assessment that the Lakers will, you know, be competing and maybe on top again sooner rather than later. I think they'll be competing as soon as this year. They have that one dude on their team. What's his name? He's got a 23. I forget his name, but whatever. The thing with Kobe in this instance is, how in the world can Kobe Bryant accuse another team of having bandwagon fans when a whole bunch of bandwagon fans just came on the Lakers? You know, like there are a bunch of new bandwagon fans who just joined the Lakers. LeBron's fanboys, shout out to KD, all just joined the Lakers bandwagon. So it's really difficult for the team that's getting a bunch of bandwagon fans to complain that another team has a bunch of bandwagon fans.
All right, and finally, Robin, you had a couple of big trailers drop this week. Of course, Captain Marvel and Avengers 4. So what's your favorite movie trailer of all time?
But, I mean, this is difficult, man, because, you know, it's always the most recent one. I mean, I thought the Avengers Endgame trailer was sick. Just the way it was perfect in its tone, in that it heightened the drama without giving too much away. I've seen it about 10 times, I think, since yesterday. I think that the perfect trailer is the trailer that doesn't tell you what the movie has in it. Doesn't ruin too much of the movie, but also sets you the exact tone for what the movie is. And some of the mystery in trailers I like. So I'm trying to think if there's like, what was the original Jurassic Park trailer? Does anybody remember that? Like, that's the problem with this question, Anthony, I have trouble with, is like, I can't retroactively remember the trailers. Sometimes there's a trailer that's better than the movie, and you know that. You see that, and you're like, oh. And I watch a lot of trailers nowadays, because with kids, I got two kids, like, it's an easy thing to watch. Let's like flip through and watch a bunch of trailers. But you know, there can be a really good trailer cut, like, you know, what was the Suicide Squad movie? Did not look as bad as it was via the trailer itself. But I'm trying to remember if there's just one epic trailer that got me. Godzilla had a good trailer and wasn't such a good movie. I'm not talking about the one that's coming out. I'm trying to think if there's one trailer that hooked me in. Otherwise, I'm just going to have to say the latest Marvel trailer, because that's the one that I'm most excited about at the moment.
Was there any major takeaways that you from this trailer, Endgame trailer?
Sure. I think Ant-Man is a huge key. And I think something to do with Ant-Man in the quantum realm will have something to do with time travel. And if you notice, in that footage, they're showing the surveillance footage of him at the front door. And Captain America says, is that a current video? And Black Widow says, that's the front door. So they thought he was snapped away by Thanos. So that could just be their surprise that he's there in the moment. But the left corner of that camera says archive footage too. So that could be him in the past at the front door also. So that's the biggest takeaway I had was that Ant-Man is clearly going to have a big plot point and be a big key into what they're doing. And I think it's obvious that Captain America and Iron Man are going to play a central role, maybe even a sacrificial role.
Yeah, to get the others back.
In the end game. Like, I think the original, the OG Avengers, yeah, are going to have their curtain call for the most part.
We got to see Hawkeye as Ronin?
Yes, we did. I think, obviously, it wasn't revealed in the trailer, but the Hulk is going to redeem himself, right? He has to. Come on, Hulk. We're all counting on you. Would you sacrifice half of all life, Anthony, to see that movie right now?
Absolutely not.
Good. I'm glad that you gave the right answer. If you miss any portion of the show, you go to cbssportsradio.com, click on the audio page, and grab the podcast. I'll be back next Saturday morning, same Robin time, same Robin channel.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.